and his destiny might well be part and parcel of this man, this being called Scythus. In the old times, the Vampiri had named their sons after themselves. Blood sons, egg recipients, common vampires, all had adopted the name of their sire. The custom had changed somewhat, but not entirely. Arcus Leperson was the recipient's son of his leper father, Radu Arcus. Arcus the Leper, they'd called him. Wherefore his son, a traveller lieutenant who more than a century ago found favour in Radu's scarlet eyes, was now Arcus Leperson. He carried Radu's egg. Similarly, Fess Ferenc was the blood son born of a woman, of Eon Ferenc. His traveller mother died giving birth to the giant, whose size was such it impressed his father to let him live. A great error, that. While yet a youth, Fess had killed Eon, then opened his body to steal and devour his vampire egg whole. This way, Eon could not pass it on to any other, and his eyrie on Starside must evolve naturally to Fess. Shaitan, in his day, had sired many offspring, and by various means, but his egg had gone to Shythar Shatterson, who, in his turn, had fathered vampires, and Shaitan's blood-spawn children have been named Scythus, Shylar the Hagridden, Scythag, and so on. While among his egg-son, Shylar's spawn had been one called Shylar the Slut, and possibly others with similar-sounding names derived from one original. And all of these before Shaitan himself was banished. Wherefore, was it too much to ask, too improbable, that 3,000 years later this one, this Scythus, could now appear, banished, like his forebear before him? Shaitan thought not. But a direct descendant? The blood is the life, and only blood would tell. Aye, the blood would tell.
Take from him?
Shaitan commanded the miniature officers of his law.
Just one of you, a nip, the merest sip. Take from him and bring it to me.
He said no more. And in his ice crevice hiding place, Scythus scarcely felt the fishhook sharp needles that punctured the lobe of his ear and drew blood, and was only faintly aware of the whir of small wings making away from him into the frozen labyrinth of the ice castle, then out of that amazing sculpture and into the star-bright night of the world. Some short time later, the albino swooped down inside that all-but-extinct central cone of Shaitan's sulphur-yellow apartments, and there hovered, waiting on his word. From his dark corner he commanded it,
"Come, little one, I won't crush you."
The tiny creature flew to him, folded his wings, and fastened to Shaitan's hand. He coughed up spittle and mucus into what passed for a palm, and one small bright splash of ruby blood. And...
"Good,"
said Shaitan.
"Now go."
Only too pleased to obey, the bat hastened from its master and left him to his own devices. Fascinated for long and long, Shaitan gazed at the ruby droplet. It was blood, and the blood is the life. He waited impatiently for the vampire flesh of his hand to open into a tiny mouth and sip the droplet in, an automatic thing born of hideous instinct, from which he would know that this was just the blood of a common man. But he waited in vain, for like himself, Scythus was uncommon, very much like himself, and...
"Mine!"
said Shaitan at last, in a croaking, shuddering, delighted whisper.
"Flesh of mine!"
At which the droplet quivered and soaked through the leprous skin of his hand and into him as if it were a sponge. Chapter 3. The Ferenc's Story. Scythus slept long and long. The bats kept him warm, at least kept him from freezing solid in his ice niche. His wounds healed. His thoughts, like Scythus himself, remained hidden until it was time to rouse himself and to be up and about, which was when his hiding place was discovered.
"What? Who?"
The astonished, involuntary mental exclamations brought Scythus starting awake, echoing in his mind. While still the echoes rang, he was on his feet, his blanket of albino bats breaking up in a chittering disarray, whirring away from him like a shock of sentient snow. Another moment and his hand filled his gauntlet. He let his vampiric senses reach out, but cautiously, tentatively, to discover who was here. Whoever, he must be near, else he wouldn't have sensed Scythus's emergence. While sleeping, Scythus's thoughts had flowed inwards, an art in which he was adept. His dreams could not be heard by any other. But during the transition from deep, healing sleep to waking, they had escaped like a yawn, and someone had been close enough to hear it, too close by far. Scythus allowed his mental probe to touch that of the other, and immediately snatched it back. Contact had been brief, but recognition mutual, insufficient to detail specific identities, but enough that each creature was certain of the other's presence. Scythus glanced this way and that. There was only one way out of this niche. If he was trapped, then he was trapped. So be it.
Who is it?
He sniffed the air with his bat's snout.
Is it you, Fess, come for your supper? Or must I soil my good gauntlet in pus to tear out the loathsome heart of the odious Vols Piniscu?
And back came the answer, like an astonished gasp in the vampire's mind.
Ha! Scythus, you survived the Dweller's death beams, then?
Arcus Leperson. Scythus knew him at once. He breathed his relief, watched curiously for a moment while his breath fell as snow, then made for the exit. Along the way he flexed his muscles, swung his limbs, inhaled deeply and tested his ribs. All seemed in order. Pah! What had those minor dents and scratches been for wounds anyway? Repairs had been minimal. His vampire flesh had scarcely been overtaxed. He was left with an ache here, a bruise there. Arcus stood close to the foot of the ice staircase. He was squat for a lord of the Vampiri, scarcely more than 6 feet tall. Ah, but a good 3 feet broad, too. A massive barrel of a man. His strength had been prodigious. Now it seemed he'd lost a little weight. Scythus moved towards him, closing the distance between with the easy, flowing glide of the vampire. Sinister to ordinary men, but normal by the Vampiri standards. In another moment they were face to face.
Well, said Scythus, and is it peace, or are you too hungry to think straight? I'll be frank, I could use a friend. And by the look of you, our circumstances are much the same. The choice is yours, but I know Weather's food.
The other's entirely instinctive reaction was a single belched word.
Food!
His eyes opened wide, and his flaring, convoluted snout plumed ice crystal breath. Plainly, Arcus was starving. Scythus offered him a grim smile, took from his pouch the last piece of cold bear heart and devoured half of it in a single bite, then tossed the rest to the leper's son, who snatched it from the air with a cry almost of pain, and without pause he crammed his mouth full. Arcus had been sired by Morgus Griefcry out of a traveller's waif. She'd been a leper, and her infection had taken him in his member, which along with his limbs, eyes, and ears had been among the first of his parts to slough. The disease had been like a fire in him, burning him faster than his vampire could replenish. Finally, with cries of grief echoing his name to the full, Morgus had taken a firebrand and hurled himself and his traveller, Odalisk, into a refuse pit, whose accumulation of methane gas had done the rest. His suicide had left Arcus the youthful lord and heir to the fine Eyrie. Even better, Arcus had not contracted his forebear's disease. Not yet, anyway. Perhaps he never would. It had all been many sundowns ago. While Arcus ate, Scythus studied him. Squat in the body, Arcus's skull was likewise squat, as if it had been crushed down a little. His face seemed pushed out in front, and his bottom jaw further yet, with boar's teeth curving upwards over his fleshy upper lip. And yet the overall effect wasn't so much swinish as wolfish, especially with the inordinate length of his furred, tapering ears. Aye, somewhere in his lineage there had been a grey one for sure, Moreover, he was as lean as a wolf. Well, by the standards of a former time at least. Now, eyes ablaze with the lust of feeding upon however small a morsel, he nevertheless narrowed them to gaze at Scythus. And when he was done,
"I grant you it was a bite," he grunted. "But was that the food you promised?"
"I made no promises," Scythus answered. "I stated a fact. I know where there's food, by the ton."
"Ah,"
the other grunted, and cocked his head to one side.
"Volsen's flyer, do you mean? Oh, they guarded well, Volsen Ferenc. It's a mouse trap, Scythus. Only approach their private pantry too closely, and you'll end up in it. No chivalry here, my friend. Cold, crystallized meat could never taste as good as red juice of meat spurting from a severed artery. But beggars can't be choosers. I tried and failed. They're never too far away. I know they lust after my blood."
"Are you reduced to this?"
Scythus raised a black, spiky eyebrow.
"Scavenging after each other?"
He knew, of course, that they were. Knew he would be, too, soon enough. The chivalry of the Vampiri was at best a myth, but in any case, his insult, the word scavenging, was lost on Arcus Lepperson.
"Scythus," said the other, "I've been here for going on 5 sundowns, 5 auroral displays, anyway, which I reckon amounts to much the same time, reduced to hunting each other. Let me tell you that if it moves, I'll hunt it. I had bats by the handful at first, squeezed them to pulp so they'd drip into my mouth, then ate the pulp too. But now they won't come anywhere near me. They have minds of their own, these tiny old minos. Right now, I'm on my way to see the shriveled old grandfather frozen in the ice up top. I'd have tried to get at him before, if I was desperate enough, which now I am. So don't talk to me about being reduced to this or that. We're all reduced, Scythus, and you know less than anyone else."
So maybe Scythus's insult had got through after all. That came as something of a surprise. The leper's son had always seemed such a dullard. Perhaps the cold had sharpened his wits.
"Arcus," Scythus said, "there are 2 of us now, and we've shared food. That's good, for it strikes me we'll do better as a team. While you've been here, you've learned things and must know many of the pitfalls. Such knowledge has value. Also, the disgusting Volspinescu and gigantic Fesberenk will think twice before coming on 2 of us together. Now, what do you say we leave this echoing shell of ice and find our breakfast?"
The leper's son sighed his impatience, which angered Scythus a little. He wasn't used to dull, squat creatures playing the equal with him.
"Now let me repeat myself," Arcus grunted. "They guard Vols's flyer, and guard it well. They're likewise well-fueled, which we're not. And as you yourself have just this minute pointed out, the Ferengs are bloody giant."
Scythus fled his nostrils, and for a moment thought to leave the fool to his own devices, except that would also mean leaving him to the tender mercies of the others, eventually. And Scythus wanted Arcus for himself, eventually. But these were thoughts he steered inwards, lest Arcus hear them.
"And can they guard 2 beasts?
He said.
"And did you think I'd walked here, Arcus Dire Death?"
The idiot's other name. It stopped Arcus dead.
"Eh? Another flyer? I haven't seen it. But then I'd not dared venture too far out on the ice lest they see me. Where, then, this flyer?"
"Where I sent it,"
said Scythus.
"Still good and fresh and..."
"Wait a moment."
He sent out a beast-orientated thought.
"Do you hear me?"
And in return sensed life flickering still, but burning very low.
"Aye, and not yet bled to death, not quite.
Well, they know it's there, that great vat of filth and that Ferenc. Of course, else I'd not require assistance from you."
"Ha!" Arcus cried.
"I might have known it. Something for nothing."
"What?
Think again, Arcus, my lad. This is a grand lord Scythus you're talking to. Oh, let's be friends, Arcus, because I've need of you."
Scythus shrugged.
So be it. I merely envisaged a joint venture which would furnish joint returns, that's all. Equal shares. But something for nothing? What? And did you think this was Sunside at sundown, with plenty of sweet traveller game afoot?
He made as if to turn away.
Starve, then. Wait.
The other took a pace closer, and in more reasonable tone.
What's your plan?
None,
said Scythus.
Except to eat.
Eh?
Scythus's turn to sigh.
Listen, and I'll ask you again. Can they guard two flyers, Vos and the Ferenc?
Certainly, a man to each.
But we are two men, and if they're both together, then one beast goes unguarded. Has the cold numbed your once agile brain, Arcus?
That last was a lie, but a little flattery wouldn't hurt. The leper's son thought about it for a moment, then scowled and stabbed a finger at Scythus.
Very well, but if we come upon Vos Peniscu on his own, we kill him, and I want his heart. Is it a deal?
Agreed,
said Scythus.
Actually, I should think it's the only part worth eating,
Arcus snorted, and...
Oh,
he laughed in his own way. And...
Go on, laugh.
Scythus kept his thoughts hidden.
But when Vos and Fess are done for, you're next, bone brain.
And out loud,
Now guard your thoughts. We go out onto the ice.
Vos Penescu's flyer was rimmed with frost, stiff as a board. Still, Arcus Leperson would have set too, but Scythus cautioned him.
Let's not waste valuable time here. What? Why, you'd wear those tusks of yours to stumps on this?
Arcus turned to him with a scowl.
Well, it's food, isn't it?
Aye,
Scythus said.
And half a mile over there, a lot more of it.
But thick, red, and flowing with juicy pipes. Good beasts I breed, Arcus, of the finest flesh. Now listen. Do you sense our enemies? No, neither do I. So today they're not doing much guarding, right?
Arcus sniffed the icy air.
Well, it worries me. What are they up to, do you suppose?
Time for supposing after we've filled our bellies.
Scythus had already set off across the blue foxfire ice, and Arcus came shambling after. Scythus glanced back over and nodded, then faced forward and grinned his sly grin as of old. Ever the leader, Scythus, and how easy once more to take up the mantle. And behind him, Arcus Leperson, like a dog to heel. The wind came up. While Scythus and Arcus Leperson, called Diadeath, sat in a cave carved by Vos and Fess in the underbelly of Scythus's flyer, and sipped the feebly pulsing juices of that now insensate beast, the radiant stars were blotted out by dark, scudding clouds. Snow came down in a short-lived blizzard, which loaned the ice a thin, soft coating. When the wind died down again, the cannibalized flyer was dead, and its arteries already stiffening.
"Cold fare from this time forwards,"
commanded Scythus, sticking up his head to spy out the land around. He looked towards the spine of volcanic peaks, then looked again, and frowned his concern.
"Arcus, what do you make of this?"
Arcus stood up, belched noisily, looked where Scythus pointed.
"Eh, that, a whirlwind of snow devil. The last flurry in the wake of the storm. What's this great fascination with nature, Scythus?"
"Fascination with what's natural? None whatsoever. With what's unnatural, plenty. Especially in a place like this."
"Unnatural?"
"By nature's mundane standards, aye, if not by those of the Vampiri."
He continued to study the phenomenon, a whirling cloud of snow forming a squat cylinder 20 feet high and the same in diameter. Something seemed to move in its heart, like a tadpole in a jelly egg, and the whole device was making a beeline their way. It threw off whips of snow, which quickly settled to the ground without diminishing the central mass. Scheithers nodded. He knew what it was.
Fesferink,
he whispered grimly.
What? Fess?
Arcus gaped at the thing, now only 100 yards away, across the shining ice, coming at walking pace and beginning to thin out a little.
How, Fess?
That's a vampire mist, said Scheithers, donning his gauntlet. On Starside it will creep, flow, drift outwards from him. Here it turns to snow. Fess was a fine mist-maker. His great mass. During the hunt, I've seen him cover an entire hillside.
They both threw out their vampire senses towards the weird earthbound cloud. Only one creature inside it. The Ferenc high, but wary as never before. He hadn't the strength to hide himself.
Aha!
Growled Arcus.
We have him!
But let's first discover what goes on,
Scheithers cautioned him.
Isn't it obvious what goes on?
The leper's son was scowling again.
Why, he's finally burst that monstrous boil, Vulspinescu, but in fight depleted himself. So now he's at our mercy, of which I have precious little.
20 paces away the cloud fell as a final flurry, and Feth stood there, naked, entirely naked, and not only of his snow-cloud cover. Arcus gawped, but Scheithers called out,
Well, Fess, and how fortunes change, eh?
It would seem so.
The other's deep bass voice echoed over the ice plain, but there was a shiver in it. He was freezing, and yet under one arm he carried his clothes in a bundle. Scheithers couldn't see the sense of it. There must be a story here, and he wanted to know it. Arcus sensed Scheithers's curiosity.
Me, I'm not interested, he snarled. I say we kill him now.
You say too much, Scheithers hissed. You think only of your own survival without a thought for the future. Myself, I think of my continued survival, now and however long I may sustain it. So you bide your time, or our partnership ends here. Am I to die?
Ferenc stood tall, glooming on Scheithers across that short distance.
If so, then get it over with, for I've no wish to turn to a block of ice.
But he threw down his clothes and hunched forward a little, and his talons were sharp as razors hanging at his sides.
It seems I had the advantage, said Scheithers. Also a score to settle. You caused me not a little pain.
The Ferenc made no answer.
However,
Scheithers continued,
we may yet come to an agreement. As you see, Arcus and I have formed a team of our own. Safety in numbers, you know. But 2 against the Icelands, the odds are too high. 3 of us might fare better.
Some kind of trick.
Fess couldn't believe it. If their roles had been reversed, Scheithers was already dead. Scheithers shook his head.
No trick. Like dire death here, you have knowledge of this place, and just as the blood is the life, so is the knowledge. That has always been my conviction. To fight among ourselves is to die. Sharing knowledge by pooling our resources, we might yet survive.
Say on,
said Fess, his voice more shivery than ever. Scheithers shook his head again.
Nothing more to say. Come out of the cold and replenish yourself, and tell us what's happened, that you go naked as a babe in such a place, hidden in a weird and very unsubtle mist. Aye, and then perhaps you'd advise us on the whereabouts of the unlovely Vulspinescu, your erstwhile companion.
The Ferenc had no choice. Flee, and they would catch him, for they were well-fueled. Stand still and freeze, and they'd thaw him out and eat him. Go forward and talk, and perhaps he could yet make his peace with Scheithers. As for Arcus, that one was something else. He came on, got down in the lee of the stiffening flyer, tore a vein from the wall of flesh, and bit through it. Nothing was forthcoming. The creature's blood was finished or frozen in the outer regions of its bulk, so he merely stripped the pipe down with his teeth and swallowed the pulp. It was sustenance, if nothing else. Between mouthfuls, he commented,
Perhaps we should have stayed on Starside.
At least the dweller would have made a quick end of it.
Still blaming me, Fess?
Scythus stood over him, watched him fueling himself. Arcas sat well away, scowling as usual.
I blame all of us, the Frank answered, perhaps bitterly. Hot heads, we rushed in like blind men over a precipice. Fools, we went to murder and instead committed suicide. It was your plan, aye, but we all fell in with it.
He stood up and went back onto the ice to his garments, there crouching and cleaning them thoroughly with snow. At least there was that to be said for the giant. He'd always been scrupulous. When he was done, he returned again to the cave of cooling flesh and lay his clothes aside to dry or freeze out.
Some strange contamination?
Scythus wondered out loud.
You could say that.
The other wrinkled his already much convoluted snout.
Those stinking stains were vols.
And as he continued to eat, so between mouthfuls, he told them about it.
Vols and I, we'd noticed smoke from the central cone. Also some strange activity now and then in a high cave. And we thought, if that old mountain contains heat and fire, it's only reasonable that someone settled there. But who? Common men? Exiled Vampiri, perhaps? No way to discover unless we went to sea. Oh, we cast our probes ahead of us, of course, but who or whatever lived in the volcano, he kept his thoughts to himself. The way is longer than it looks, maybe 5 miles to the foot of the mount, then a rising climb of 2 more to its cone. But near the top, where the way gets steep, there was this cave. And that was where we'd seen signs of activity, like mirrors glinting in the starlight. Dwellers, we thought. Snow trogs or the like. Meat, anyway. Aye, there was meat, all right.
The Ferenc's aspect was suddenly grim.
A ton of it. But best if I tell it as it happened and not go ahead of myself. So, we arrived at the mouth of this cave, all craggy and yellow with sulphur. An old lava run, I fancied, but hardly fit habitation, and no jot warmer than any other place around here. We cast our probes ahead of us. There was life in there, some dull intelligence far back in the cave. We hardly felt threatened, and it seemed likely the borehole passed right through the mountain all the way to the core. And if that's where the warmth was, that's where we'd find the life. So we went in. The tunnels had its twists and turns, and it was dark and smelly as a refuse pit in there. But what is darkness to the Vampiri? Vals, who had fashioned the most incredible pustules to enhance his hideous appearance, took the lead. He'd stripped off his jacket, and his upper body was entirely festooned with all manner of morbid things. Who or whatever, he said. Only let them see me or feel me near, and they'll know there's nothing for it but to faint and hope it's a bad dream. I thought he was probably correct and had no objection to his going first. Then, ah!
Fess gave a small start as he spied a miniature albino bat hovering near, under the overhang of the dead flyer's side. In a lightning swipe he scythed it in 2 parts in mid-air, and,
"Ah, yes," he said. "Perhaps I should mention, Vols and I, we have companions all along the way. Those damned bats, they get everywhere."
"Why treat them so harshly?"
Scythus cut in.
"On Starside they were our small familiars."
"These aren't the same."
Fess shook his great head.
They lack obedience.
Scythus frowned. They'd obeyed him, hadn't they? Arcas growled.
Never mind the bats, but finish your story. It interests me.
Partially replenished, invigorated from his feeding, the Ferenc began to don his clothes, generating body heat to complete the job of drying them out. He was adept at this, as he was at mismaking, and while he dressed, so he continued with his story.
Vals went first, then, into the heart of the riddled rock. And I'll be honest, we thought there was nothing there. Nothing to alarm or threaten us, anyway. and yet I sense that the picture we had of that place, of its suspected dweller or dwellers, was probably a false one. It seemed to me that my mind was watched, even though I'd failed to detect the watcher. But the deeper we proceeded into the mountain, the more the conviction grew to me that our progress was monitored, even minutely, as if each step led us closer to some terrific confrontation, some contrived and monstrous conclusion. In short, an ambush.
Arcas grunted and nodded his head.
The very way I felt, he remarked in a low, dark manner, on those several occasions when I'd approached Vulsi's flyer for a bite to eat.
Just so,
Fess nodded, without taking offence, and perhaps deliberately failing to find anything of accusation in Arcas's statement.
And I knew fear. Well, no, not fear, for we're none of us bred that way. Shall we simply say, then, that I experienced a new sensation which was not pleasant? Nor was this presentiment without foundation, as will be seen. And all the while those damned albinos tracking our course, until their fluttering and chittering had grown to be such an annoyance that I stayed back a little to strike out at them where they swooped overhead, which probably saved my life. Ahead of me, Vulse had gone striding on, but he sensed it coming in the same instant that I sensed it, and he said one word before it struck. The word he said was, "What?" Yes, he questioned it, and even questioning it, he never knew what hit him.
"Explain."
Arcas was breathless, and Scythus was intent, wrapped upon Ferenc's story. Fess shrugged. Fully dressed again, he sliced goblets of flesh from the flyer's aviolate ribs, sliding them one by one down his throat.
"Hard to explain,"
he said after a while.
"Fast, it was. Huge, mindless, terrible. But I saw what it did to Vulse, and I determined that it would not do the same to me. I never fled from anything in my life before, well, except the dweller and the awesome destruction he wrought in the battle for his garden. But I fled from this. It was white, but not a healthy white. The white of hiding in places too dark, like some cavern fungus. It had legs, a great man, I think, with clawed webbed feet. Its body was fish-like, its head, too, with jaws ferocious. But the weapon it bore..."
"The weapon?"
Arcas thrust his face forward.
"But you said the thing was mindless. And now, mind enough to carry a weapon?"
The Ferenc glanced at him scornfully, then held up his own taloned hands.
"And these are not weapons. This thing's weapon was part of it, fool, just as your own boar's tusks are part of you."
"Yes, yes, understood,"
said Scythus impatiently.
"Say on."
Fess settled down again, but his eyes were uneasy, wide in his massive, malformed face.
"Its weapon was a knife, a sword, a lance, but with tins like thorns all down its length, from tip to snout, a barbed rod for stabbing, and once stabbed the victims hooked, with no way to free himself except tear his own flesh wide open. And at the tip of that bone-plated ram, twin holes like nostrils, but not for breathing."
He paused.
"For what, then?"
Arcas could not contain himself.
"For sucking,"
said the Ferenc.
"A vampire thing?"
Scythus seemed convinced.
"A warrior, but uncontrolled, with no rightful master. A creature created by some exiled vampiric lord, which has outlasted its maker."
He said these things, but he did not necessarily believe them. No, he uttered them aloud to cover the nature of his true thoughts, which were different again. Fess fell for Scythus's ploy anyway.
"These are possibilities, aye,"
the giant said.
"Healthy, sly as a fox, and all unheralded. It crept out from a side tunnel, but when it struck, ah, lightning moves more slowly. It slid into view, and its spear stabbed at Vulse 3 times. The first blow ripped him open, through boils and all, and splattered me and the walls of the tunnel with all his pus, whose amount was prodigious. He was like a huge blister, bursting and wetting everything with his vile liquids. I was drenched. The second thrust hit him while he was still reeling from the first, It almost sawed his head off. And the third that sank into him, into his heart, where it commenced to suck like a great pump. And while the thing held him upright, impaled him on its weapon against the wall, sucking at him, so the creature's saucer eyes fixed me in their monstrous glare, so that I knew I was next. That was when I fled.
And Fess actually shuddered, which amazed Scythus.
And couldn't you have saved him?
Arcas sneered, questioning Fess's manhood. A dangerous line of inquiry at best. But the other took it well.
I tell you, Vulse was a goner. What? And so much of his liquids used up, his head half shorn away, and the thing's great siphon in him, emptying him. Save him? And what of myself? You, dire death, have not seen this creature. Why, even Lesk the Glut, in whichever hell he now resides, would not stray near such a monster. No, I fled. And all the way out of that long, long tunnel, I could hear the thing slobbering as it drained Vulse's juices. Also, by the time I struck light and open air, I fancied it slobbered all the louder, perhaps hot on my trail. In something of a panic, yes, I admit it, I called a mist out of myself and hurried out onto the slopes and down to the plain of snow and ice. Then I stripped off, for Vulse's drench was poisonous, and without further pause hurried back here, and found you two waiting for me. The tale is told.
Arcas and Scythus sat back, narrowed their eyes, and fingered their chins. Scythus kept his thoughts mainly to himself, though truth to tell there was nothing especially sinister and vindictive about them. But Dire Death, feeling that he still had the Ferengi at something of a disadvantage, was somewhat loath to let the giant so lightly off the hook.
"Times and fortunes change," the leper's son eventually said. "I went starving, went indeed in fear of my life, when you and the great Wen had the upper hand, but now you are only one man against myself and Lord Scythus."
"These things are true,"
Fess answered, standing up and stretching and flexing the mighty talons which were his hands.
"But do you know, I can't help wondering what the Lord Scythus sees in you, leper's son? For it seems to me there's about as much use in you as there is in that mighty bag of slop called Valspinescu. Also, and now that I come to think of it, it strikes me I sat still for a good many hurtful slights and insults while relating my story. Of course I was hungry and cold as death, and a man will sit still for a lot while there's a chance he can fill his belly. But now that my belly's full and I'm warm again, I think you do well to back off, Dire Death, or come to just such an end as your name suggests."
"Aye,"
said Scythus, with a quick nod, coming between them.
"Well, and enough of that. Let's just face it, we've all we can handle in the Icelands themselves, without being at each other's throats too."
He took their arms and sat down, drawing them down with him.
"Now tell me," he said, "what are the secrets of these Icelands? After all, I'm a newcomer here, but the two of you, why, you've explored and adventured galore, and so the sooner I know all that you know, the sooner we'll be able to decide on our next move."
Scythus let his gaze wander to and fro from one to the other, finally allowing it to settle on Arcas's dark and twitching countenance, his coarse lips and the yellow ivory of his tusks.
"How about it, Arcas?"
he said.
"You've had a little less freedom than Fess, it's true, but still you've managed to explore a few ice castles. Well, the Ferengi's told us his tale of the horror in the cone, so now I reckon it's your turn. What are the ice eyries here, eh? What have these ancient exiled ice-insisted vampiry lords?"
Arcas scowled at him.
"You want to know about the frozen ones? The sooner all is known,"
said Scythus, nodding,
"the sooner we may proceed."
Arcas shrugged, however, grudgingly.
"We'll have no problem with that," he said. "So you want to know what I've seen, done, discovered? It won't take long in telling, I promise you." "Tell us anyway,"
said Scythus,
"and we'll see what we make of it."
Again, Arcas's shrug.
"So be it,"
he said. Chapter 4. The Frozen Lords. After the mayhem in the Dweller's Garden, Arcis commenced, when it was seen how the Dweller and his Hell-lander father had destroyed our armies, shattered our sentried stacks, and brought our Eyries crashing down, there seemed no alternative but flight. The Dweller had our measure. The Vampiri were fallen. To remain in the ruins of Starside would surely bring great enemies down upon us one last time in a final venting of their furious might. However, it is the immemorial right of the fallen to quit Starside and forge for the Icelands. Thus, in the lull which followed on the destruction of our Eyries, those survivors who had the means for flight forsook their ancient territories and headed north. I was one such survivor. Along with a pair of aspiring lieutenants, ex-traveller thralls of mine, twin brothers named Gorham and Bilart Lagazi, who vied with each other for my egg, I cleared away the debris of my fallen stack from the deeply buried entrance to subterranean workshops, so freeing our flyer and one warrior kept aside and safe against this event of just such a calamity as a Dweller's victory. These beasts were saddled and mounted. I myself took the warrior, an ill-tempered creature personally trained to my tastes, finally fleeing on a course roughly northward from the wrack and ruin of the Eyries. Our heading was not true north, perhaps a little west of north. What odds? The roof of the world is the roof of the world. To left or right, it is still the roof. We paused only once, where a shoal of great blue fishes had got themselves trapped in the formation of a shallow ice lake, and there glutted ourselves before proceeding further. Not long after, the Lagazi brothers' flyers, burdened as it was with two riders, became exhausted. It went down at the rim of a shallow sea and left its riders floundering. I landed on the frozen strand, set my warrior back to the Lagazis to let down its launching limbs and tow them ashore, and then it was that we found ourselves in a very curious place. Hot blowholes turned the snow yellow. Bubbling geysers made warm pools in the ageless ice. Seabirds came down to feed on the froth of small fishes where they spawned at the ocean's rim. It was the farthest reach of these selfsame volcanic mountains which were active still in those weird western extremes. After the Lagazis were dragged ashore and while they dried themselves out, I looked for a landing place and discovered a glacier where it sloped oceanward. There I ordered my creature down onto the ice. For by now that warrior mount of mine was likewise sore weary, whose valiant efforts in saving the twins from drowning has scarcely buttressed its vitality. They need to kill and devour a deal of red meat, warriors, else rapidly fade away to nothing. And so I thought to myself, which will prove more useful to me in the islands, a powerful warrior or a pair of bickering, unimportant and ever-hungry thralls? No contest. It was my thought to slaughter one of the brothers there and then, and feed him to my warrior, except, well, I'll admit it, I'd underestimated the fine pair of Vampiri aspirants. They too had been busy weighing the odds, and their conclusions had likewise favoured my fighting beast. Now they backed off to a safe distance and descended into deep, narrow crevices from which I could neither threaten nor tempt them to come out and approach me. Mutinous dogs! Very well, let them freeze. Let them starve, let them both die. I climbed aboard my warrior and spurred the creature slithering down the glacier's ramp until at last it bounded aloft and spurted out over the sea. And not before time. The launching of that depleted beast had been a very close-run thing, so that I could almost taste the salt spray from the waves against the glacier. However, I was now airborne. I turned inward, swept high overhead where the treacherous Lagazi twins had emerged from the ice to angle their faces up at me, waved them a scornful farewell, and set course for a line of distant peaks standing in silhouette against the sky's weaving auroral pulse. These same peaks which stand behind us even now with their central volcanic cone, whose lava vents are guarded, according to the Ferengi at least, by sword-snouted monsters. Aye, the very same. Nor would I, nor could I, call Fess a liar in that respect. In the matter of Vols's death by some strange and savage creature, for certain my warrior came to a sad and suspicious end. And who can say that Vulse and my poor weary warrior were not victims of the selfsame blood beast? I will tell you how it was. My warrior was weary until death, well, perhaps not so weary, for as you know well enow, they don't die easily and rarely of weariness. But the creature was depleted and panting and complaining. I scanned the land about and saw lava runs on the highest slopes of the central cone. Good, slippery launching ramps if the warrior should ever again find itself fit for flight. Alas, the landing was awkward and the beast threw me. It cracked its armoured carapace, wrenched a vein and tore a propulsion orifice on the jagged lava outcrop. Many gallons of fluid were lost before its metamorphic flesh webbed over the gashes and sealed them. My own injuries were slight, however, and I ignored them. But such was my anger, and I cursed and kicked the warrior a good deal before its mood turned ugly and it began to bellow and spit. Then I was obliged to calm the brute, and finally I backed it up and hid it from view in the mouth of a cavern tunnel, much similar, perhaps identical, to that leprous white blood beast as described by the Ferenc. For this tunnel was likewise an ancient lava run from the once molten core, and perhaps I should have explored its interior a little way. But at the time there was no evidence of anything suspicious about the central cone. I ordered the warrior to heal itself, left it there in the cavern entrance, let my curiosity get the better of me, and came down by foot onto the plain of the shimmering ice castles to see what they contained. For as you've seen, they looked for all the world like vampiry stacks or eyries formed from ice. As for what I discovered, it was very strange, very awesome, indeed a frightening thing. Expatriate lords, all frozen in suspended animation, ice-locked in the cores of their glittering castles. A good many were dead, crushed or sheared by shifting ice, but there were some, too many, I thought, who had variously succumbed. Others were preserved, however, sleeping still within impenetrable walls of ice hard as iron, their vampire metabolism so reduced that they seemed scarcely changed over all the long centuries. Ah, this was a false impression. Their dreams were fading, ephemeral things, mere memories of the lives they had known in the old times when the first of the Vampiri inhabited their stacks on Starside and waged their territorial wars there. All of the ex-lords were dying, ah, slowly, so slowly, but dying nevertheless. Of course they were, the blood is alive, and for centuries without number, all they had was ice.
Some of them, Fess Ferenc broke in, most of them aye, but one at least had not gone without. This was the conclusion which Vulse Penisco and I arrived at when we examined the ice castle stacks.
Scythus looked at him, then at Arcas.
Will one of you, or both, elaborate?
Arcas shrugged. I take it the Ferenc is talking about the matter of breaking and of the empty ice thrones, for it's a fact, as I've hinted, that certain of the frozen keeps and redoubts, indeed a good many, have been broken into, and their helpless, refrigerated inhabitants removed. But by whom? To where? For what?
The huge, hulking, slope-skulled Ferenc broke in again with,
I've reached certain conclusions about these things, too. Should I say on?
And again Arcas Leperson shrugged.
If you can throw some light on the mystery, by all means.
And Scythus said,
Aye, say on.
The Ferenc nodded and continued.
As you have noted for yourselves, the ice castles number between 50 and 60, forming concentric rings about the extinct volcano, which is the central cone. But is the volcano truly extinct? And if so, why is it that a little smoke still goes up from the ancient ice-crusted crater? Also, we have seen, myself far too clearly, how there is at least one monstrous warrior creature guarding the cone's access tunnels. Aye, but what or who else does it guard?
When his pause threatened to go on forever, finally it was Scythus's turn to shrug.
Pray continue, he said. We're in the very palm of your hand, Fess, entirely fascinated.
Indeed?
The Ferenc was somewhat flattered. One by one, he very deliberately, very loudly cracked the bony knuckles of his taloned hands.
Fascinated, eh? Well, and rightly so. And so you see, Scythus, you're not the only thinker who survived the Dweller's wrath, eh?
Scythus hummed in his convoluted nose, perhaps a little indecisively, and swung his head this way and that. Finally he said,
"I'll give you credit where credit is due, when I can see the whole picture."
"Very well," said Ferenc. "So here's what I've seen and what I reckon. Me and that foul Fester of Volspinescu, we explored the innermost ice eyries and discovered each and every one looted. Following which, and especially now that Vols is no more sucked dry by the thing in the lava run, I find it easy to piece together a fairly accurate picture of what's been happening here. The way I see it, some ancient Vampiri lord or lady is master or mistress of the slumbering volcano. In ages past, and whenever outcast vampires have happened this way, he or she has fought them off from taking possession of the volcano's comforts, and it would seem to have some residual warmth at least. Then, as the vampires lying in siege have succumbed to the cold and put themselves into hibernation, so the crafty master of the volcano has emerged from time to time to pillage their ice chambers and live off their deep frozen flesh. In effect, the ice castles are his larder."
"Huh?"
Arcus slapped his grey thigh.
"It all comes clear."
The Ferenc nodded his swollen, grotesquely proportioned head.
"You agree with my conclusions, then?"
"How can it be otherwise?" said Arcus. "What say you, Scythus?"
Scythus looked at him curiously.
"I say you blow like a pennant in the wind, now this way, now that. First you wish to kill the Ferenc, and now you agree with his every word. Is your mind so entirely changed, then?"
The leper's son scowled at him.
"I know the truth when I hear it," he said. "Also I can see the sense in sound scheming. The Ferenc's reckoning about the state of things sounds right enough to me, and your plea that we can run together for our mutual safety seems similarly wise. So what's giving you grief, Scythus? I thought you wanted us to be friends."
"So I do," Scythus answered. "It's just that I worry when loyalties change so fast, that's all. And now would you care to finish your own story? The last we heard, you'd left your injured warrior in the mouth of the lava run and gone down onto the plain to examine the ice castles."
"That I did," Arcus agreed. "And I found things pretty much as Ferenc described them. The ice-locked thrones of all those unknown Vampiri lords out of time, all cracked open and empty, like sunside hives raped of their honey. Aye, and in those ice castles, which stood more distant from the central cone, there too I found evidence of attempted robbery. Except in many an instant the ice had been too thick and the eon-shriveled lords remained safe, unburgled, intact, which meant that they were also safe from me. Finally, I wearied of my eerie explorations. I was hungry but unable to break into those ancient permafrost pantries. The small albino bats no longer trusted me but avoided my crushing hands. If my former thralls, the Lagazis, still lived, by now they'd be halfway here. They'd be exhausted too and unable to outrun me. Ah, but that was a thought. It was time I returned to my warrior creature to see how it was holding up, and so I climbed up to the high cavern where I'd hidden the beast away. Except it was not there. Several small pieces of it were there, but that was all."
"The sucking thing?" the Ferenc said. "The blood beast with the hollow sword-like cartilage snout?"
"But how so?"
Scythus wasn't so sure.
"For a mindless beast to suck a man or, given time, even a warrior dry. This I can understand, but then to cut the carcass of so huge a creature into small pieces and drag them away?"
The Ferenc only shrugged.
"These are the Icelands," he said. "They harbour strange creatures with stranger habits, and food is scarce here. Now think, on Starside, would we ever have dreamt of chewing on grubbery arteries of a flyer? What with trogs in our larders and travellers on the hoof just across the mountains? Not likely. But here, it didn't take us long to learn. Oh, we lowered our sights soon enough. And what of the mainly conjectural creatures and beings which have possibly spent their entire lives here? If the loathsome leprous blood beast hunts only for itself, then perhaps it has its own pantry somewhere. And if it hunts for a master..."
Yet again his shrug.
Perhaps he's the one who butchered Arcas's warrior and dragged his bits away.
And Scythus, turning his private thoughts inwards to guard them, thought,
Master, I your right, Fess, a master of evil, the very source of evil, in the shape of a timeless vampire lord, indeed one of the first true lords, the dark lord Shaitan. Shaitan the unborn, Shaitan the fallen.
Well, said Arcas Leperson, does the Ferenc make sense or what? And if he does, what's our next move?
And perhaps cautiously, Scythus answered,
The Ferenc makes sense, possibly.
And to himself,
Indeed he does for a misshapen fool. But he's been here longer than I have. Perhaps this isn't the sudden burgeoning of previously unsuspected intelligence in the great freak, but simply the fact that he's had longer to feel Shaitan's influence at work. To feel his ancient eyes on me, staring through the pink orbits of his myriad albino minions.
Now the Ferenc echoed Arcas.
Well, what now, Scythus? Do we have a plan?
A plan, oh yes, a plan. To discover more about this Shaitan, to seek him out and learn why he allowed me to clothe myself in his albinos for their warmth. But mainly to know what it is, this weird affinity, which draws me to a creature I've never known except in muttered myths and legends.
And out loud,
A plan, aye,
he answered, and thinking with his usual, almost casual clarity, he created a plan out of thin air, literally on the spur of the moment, one which would hopefully suit his vampire companions, and one which especially suited himself.
First, we cut a good weight of meat out of this flyer, he said, as much as we can carry comfortably, and then, on our way to the central cone, you can show me some more of the frozen lords. So far I've seen only one. Kirol Lugos, who was banished here along with Shaitan at the dawn of Vampiri tyranny. Upon which, due to its insufficiency, I may not base a firm opinion. Then, in the inner ice castles, you may also care to show me these shattered keeps, wherefrom the bodies of certain lords have been stolen. These several things for a start, then, and I'll think of others as we go along.
Arcas seemed uncertain.
Well, this is a plan. We take meat with us and visit a handful of shriveled prehistoric ice-doomed lords, also the sacked empty tombs of ancient warriors, whose fate we can only guess at. On our way to the central cone, aye,
said Scythus.
And then?
Said Ferenc.
Perhaps we destroy him who dwells within,
Scythus answered,
and gain his secrets, his beasts and possessions, and who can say, possibly even discover some means of egress from these hideous, boring and barren Icelands.
The Ferenc nodded his grotesque head.
This all sounds good to me. Very well, then let's be at it.
He commenced to cut strips of frozen flesh from the curve of the flyer's ribcage, cramming his pockets with them. However, grudgingly, Arcas followed suit.
Meat is meat, I know, he grumbled. But the frozen flesh of flyers, ugh, the blood was the life.
And Scythus snapped his fingers and said,
Ah, yes. I know there was something else. Now tell me, dire death, what of your twin thralls, the brothers Lagazi? Did they follow you here out of the west, from the fumeral coast and the bubbling geysers and lakes of sulphur? Did they survive, or perhaps they perished en route? Perished I?
The other nodded agreeably and smiled a fond, knowing smile, his boar's tusks glinting dully.
But not en route. Perished when they got here. And when I found them exhausted and shivering in the hollow core of the westernmost ice castle, ah, how they begged my forgiveness then. And do you know, I forgave them. Indeed I did. Gurom, I cried. Belat, my favourite thralls, my trusted lieutenants, returned at last to the bosom of your mentor. Oh, how they hugged me, and I, in my turn, fell upon their necks and tore them open.
Scythus sighed, perhaps a little glumly.
You fueled yourself on both of them at once, with never a thought for tomorrow?
Arcas shrugged and finished stuffing his pockets with meat.
I had been cold and hungry for more than two auroral periods, he said, and the blood of the Lagazis was hot and strong. Perhaps I should have exercised a little restraint, kept one of them in reserve, and then again perhaps not. For it was about then that Fess and Pulse arrived. So, at least I spared myself the frustration of having one of my thralls stolen away from me. As for their corpses, I store them in the heart of the glacier. Alas, they went the same way as my warrior. Something sneaked them away while I was exploring.
Scythus allowed his narrow-eyed glance to fall upon Ferenc, who at once shook his head.
Not me.
He denied the unspoken charge.
Neither me nor Vols. We knew nothing of Arcas's glaciated thralls. If we had, well, perhaps the story were different.
He clambered out from the lee of the ravaged flyer and stood gigantically in the starlight and auroral sheen.
Well, are we all set?
Scythus and Arcas joined him. All three, they turned their faces in the direction of the central cone. Directly between the monstrous trio and the ex-volcano, an ice castle had taken, how many, centuries to crystallize about its core of volcanic rock splash. It would make as good a starting place as any. Scythus, taking in the bleak scene, and after glancing a moment into the scarlet eyes of each of his companions, finally agreed.
All set. So, let's go and see what the rest of these eon-frozen exiles look like, shall we?
And united, for the moment united at least, the vampires set out to cross the snowfields and scintillant ice jumbles when the weird terraces and shimmering battlements of their target ice castle loomed larger as gradually they narrowed the distance between, and forming a frowning centrepiece to the glittering